This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning and welcome to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanisan. Renewable energy has become a hot topic over the last few years as more countries aim to increase RE electricity generation capacity. Malaysia wants RE to contribute 20% by 2025 from the current 7%, and India wants to develop 400 gigawatts of energy from non-fossil fuels by 2030. Armed with 2.2 billion ringgit to invest in the region, Invest Energy Group wants to tap into this potential growth, aiming for a generation capacity target of up to 750 megawatts. What's the plan to hit the target and tap into this growing sector? To find out, I'm speaking with Anand Ramakrishnan, founder and group managing director of Invest Energy Group. Anand, welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Good morning, Roshan. Thank you very much for having me.
Invest Energy operates under a build, own, operate, transfer model, also known as a BOOT model, which sounds a lot like a toll concession. Concessions are awarded to a company which builds, finances, and owns the asset till the end of the agreed term. Is that what you do, but for energy assets?
That's absolutely right, Roshan. We are basically an infrastructure as a service company, which we term it as a different way of looking at BOOT or BOOT concessions. We basically would invest, develop, operate, and maintain these assets for a defined concession period that we agree with the client. We've been working on this model basically since we began the company almost about 10 years ago. And the reason behind it is that we felt that CapEx investment in renewable energy was a big burden for businesses. They were focused on their core products, whether it was making gloves or drinks or manufacturing steel ingots. And going into investments such as these did not provide them adequate returns when the core business did. So that's why we kind of basically took it off their responsibility and told them, hey, why not you pass this on to us and let us take the responsibility and generate the clean energy for you going forward.
You call yourself an infrastructure as a service company. What is the service you're providing here? Because, you know, we've seen a lot of sectors and services starting to jump on this term, right, as a service.
Very interestingly, Roshan. I mean, we didn't want to call it a zero capex model or a BOOT model, which was very conventional. And generally, when we went to clients, this is the feedback we got. When we gave them models such as BOOT, the general layman understanding would be, hey, you're like a highway concession. Are you going to lock me in for a very, very long time? And are you just going to charge me a fee as you go forward? So we kind of structured it differently and call it a service, mainly because we come in and we build an infra. Our service is providing you clean energy in many, many forms, not just electricity. It could be steam, it could be hot water, chilled water. And given that we have now moved forward from that, the secondary service that we provide them is a lot of data analytics. We basically tell them how they should operate their plants at what time, based on what capacity, in order to achieve the maximum amount of energy savings. Hence why we started terming it infrastructure as a service. We were becoming very much more like a service provider, very much more like a data center that builds a data center and puts racks in it and kind of gives you the service of storing your information and as to a certain extent analyzing it.
Now, before we get into the future and what that could look like, Anand, recently Invest Energy disposed of Conpro Industry Sdn Bhd and Meru 1 Sdn Bhd for 32 million ringgit, and this was to Kejuruteraan Asastra Berhad. You're selling cash flow generating assets here, Anand. What's the plan to replace the cash flow loss from these concessions that you've sold off?
Good question. Actually, I've been asked this really quite a number of times from investors as well. In terms of replenishing the cash flow, I understand that we are disposing these assets. There is a huge cash flow loss because of disposal of these assets, and we would not have any generating assets going forward. However, we started marketing and lobbying for a lot of new projects about almost 2 years ago, some even last year. And that is going to be our business model going forward. Whatever we did maybe 6 months to a year ago gets translated, and that wave keeps on continuing. That's how I believe sales is done in any construction project or project development and so forth. So we are hoping to translate a number of those projects in the very, very near term, and I'm talking maybe about 3 to 4 months. And once these projects start, it should immediately replenish these cash flows in a much, much larger way. And I also want to explain a bit more later on maybe how this new structure with our funders work that has the capability of replenishing these cash flows as the project goes on.
Yeah, actually, let's get into that right now, actually, because I've seen news reports that you are working with a global European ESG fund to invest 2.2 billion ringgit over the next 5 to 7 years. Anand, who is this ESG fund?
I would love to give more information on it, but we are doing a launch official signing ceremony in about 2 weeks, actually. And I would like for it to be announced there. We are doing it in a bit more manner. And just to give an idea on the fund, they are a global ESG fund. They are investors, they are based out of Switzerland. Their investors were the likes of the Temasek's, the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, the Norwegian Pension Fund, and so forth. So they've raised almost about, or aiming to raise about 1.1 billion US. It's the third or fourth fund they have done, which is focusing purely in Southeast Asia. I was one of the partners that were picked for capital deployment. And we secured almost about 100 or 110 million US with the condition that we'll have another 100 million US depending how fast we invest this money in certain mandated sectors of renewable energy and clean energy. I believe that, the announcement was about 2.2. The balance is coming by way of debt that we are currently structuring right now to raise in line with the equity that we have.
Right. So we're talking about, 400-500 million ringgit in equity then, and then the rest in debt?
That's right. So far, in our experience and with the knowledge that we have, most of the projects that we have done till date, we are able to secure roughly between an 80-20 split of debt to equity.
And I'm guessing the debt will be taken on a project-by-project basis.
Absolutely. The way we are looking at it is that we want it to be in specific SPVs for project-to-project. It's purely project financing. This is mainly because for tax purposes and to limit risk. Also, I believe in not just in Malaysia, but most of the other countries that we are in, every project has a unique license of its own that goes to the Energy Commission. So we generally don't want to bundle it up and so on, given that we are in different asset classes at all times and different customer risk and things like that.
Going back to funding, beyond debt, are you looking to raise more equity from different funds, or is this ESG fund that you're talking about the extent of the equity?
Interestingly, I've been approached ever since we put out this media blitz. So I've been approached by two other funds as well from Europe, and they are looking at deploying the same amount of capital on the same structure because the green energy space is something that everybody wants to be in, especially from the European American side, given the regulatory conditions down there are a little bit more stringent than this part of the world. However, it's a much more matured market there. We are still in a very immature market. So I'm looking at it. I'm looking at structuring it differently. And we are looking at raising equity.
And as you invest and expand further, I guess, end of the day, funds want returns, right? So what's the payback period that the ESG fund is expecting? And what kind of numbers are we talking about here?
So the fund is it's not an infinite fund. It's a finite fund that goes on for 10 plus 2 years. They are looking basically for an exit between year 5 to year 7. That's when things start getting geared up. We start looking for exit partners or IPO or anything. It just depends on what's available at that point of time and what is a better exit plan. So there's no return per se. I'm not governed by it that way. I do have a certain hurdle rate that I have to achieve in assets that I'm acquiring or developing. And it normally ranges between about 10 to 12, 13%. It just depends on which asset class that I go into.
Right. And, you mentioned IPO there. And then would that be Invest Energy Group going IPO or the specific SPVs being taken public if that were to materialize?
So it would be the specific SPV itself, how this will be structured going forward. And I believe what Invest Energy has always been, we are an industrial energy developer, clean energy developer. So we are the guys who... we're the brains who put everything together, integrate these products and execute them. The fund is there purely, again, as an asset management company, and everything else gets passed back to us to execute. And we kind of make a fee out of that as well. Some people have asked me, are you a GP? And I said, no, I'm not a general partner. I don't have a license for that. And I always tell them, but we act like a GP, but in the energy sector, whereby we are like a developer who manages money and invests basically in projects.
Right. And any plans to IPO Invest Energy Group, Anand? Has that been discussed at all?
Very interestingly, Roshan, I mean, I've been approached as well by a number of listed companies to look at how, you know, there is some sort of strategic partnership that can be worked whereby, we go on and execute this. And then you're just collecting 30%, 40%, and, you know, your stakes keep on growing as you have more cash flow as well. Obviously, we do not have to look at a near-term exit. These concessions are 21 years, 15 years. 10 plus 10, they are long-term in nature. But a fund structure is always to exit because somebody's got to get the money back. In our case, it's we like the long-term cash flow model. And for the time being, those plans are not there yet. We don't see ourselves needing to do it because we have access to enough capital to be raised.
I've been speaking to Anand Ramakrishnan, Founder and Group Managing Director of Invest Energy Group. Up next, we talk about their plans to hit 750 megawatts. Keep it here to The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kunnison. This morning, I'm speaking with Anand Ramakrishnan, Founder and Group Managing Director of Invest Energy Group. Now, Anand, Invest Energy aims to be the largest multi-asset renewable energy player with a generating capacity of up to 750 megawatts within the next 5 to 7 years. You've got a third of that done or in progress, I think about 240 megawatts already done or in development. What's the plan for the other 500 or so megawatts?
Well, Roshan, to clarify a little bit as well, the 240 is something that we have in plan that we've been working on over the last 2-3 years. And we hope to translate that into pure projects as we go on. So some of it I have already started. Some of it we are in the midst of signing the PPAs. Because some of these projects also are based outside Malaysia, in Southeast Asia, we were delayed significantly by the COVID. However, our plans for expansion are quite simple. We're already looking around the region. Malaysia is not just our focus market. It's Vietnam, it's Philippines, it's Cambodia. We are looking at projects there. We have a lot of data that we have collected over the last 4 to 5 years on projects, customers, sectors that we want to go into. And of course, how do we manage these sectors and how do we manage these countries? Every country has a different regulation. But part of this expansion plan to achieve what we are doing is a back of an envelope calculator based on what we are going to raise or have already committed to spend, which is about 2.2 billion ringgit. That should roughly translate for us into 750 years. So this is going to consist of origination of new projects. It's going to consist of a couple of mergers and acquisitions. And of course, a lot of our existing projects that we've already been working on and so forth.
So Anand, if I've got this right, I think Malaysia and Vietnam, so far 96 million ringgit has been allocated to these two markets, with another 145 million incoming for Malaysia. I think you noted that $2.2 billion has already been allocated. Could you give us a rough view of where this money could be going to? Because you mentioned some markets like Cambodia, Philippines. Have you put numbers to these different markets?
Sadly, I have not put a direct number on it, Roshan. We don't do that as well because once we start allocating capital into certain countries, we have kind of committed to the fund as well, our long-term plan. Mm-hmm. So our idea was due to a lot of uncertainty in certain countries at times, for instance, what could happen like Myanmar, we never know. So we kind of like keep our options a bit open. Wherever there is like certain allocation that we have given in terms of how we would like to invest in our asset classes, we always say like 80% of our business has always been in cogeneration and waste heat recovery power plants. We like the sector, we know what we are doing, we don't have much competition in it. And basically another 20% would go into things like solar, I would say biogas or if we find any assets like wind, which is only not going to come from outside Malaysia. However, that's been our deployment plan. A lot of these are going into very large projects for large industrial parks, ports, and mainly the sector we like focusing on now is data centers. Actually, we're working on quite a number of them.
Right. So you're looking at the MNCs or the companies that are building these projects, and you come in to build out the generation capacity that they need to power these infrastructure projects.
Absolutely, because they're always looking at, especially most of the data centers are very driven by, they're one of the major polluters in the world, actually, contrary to think of how they look and what they're supposed to be. They use a lot of cooling, they release a lot of heat to the atmosphere. So they are under a lot of pressure, the likes of the Microsoft, the Amazons or Intels, to really look into renewable energy. It's a bit limited in certain countries when you go in on what you can do. And that is where we are focusing on. We are coming there to give them a part of the service and the infra that they require to achieve those carbon neutral outcomes.
And then you mentioned Microsoft, and they recently also announced that they're going to be building a data center region in Malaysia. Are you going to be trying to bid for that project?
It's a very opportune moment to ask that question because we just had a discussion with Microsoft as well, and they are very interested to look in it, and they are trying to basically work with us not just on the basis of one data center, but like as you mentioned, how do they deploy in a region perspective, and that discussion is ongoing, and I think we are still in somewhat of I would say slightly early stages because. As we all know, with a global MNC like them, things need to be assessed in a very different way, especially.
Anand, just a quick word here on Vietnam, right? Because, I mean, you're looking at other markets as well, but Vietnam is the first foreign market that you've gone into in terms of this particular RE sector. Why Vietnam?
Interestingly, in some of the projects that we do, our partner was actually Mitsubishi from Japan. They had a very big presence in Vietnam when we wanted to expand. So we didn't want to get into a new market, look for local partners, try to assess them, which can be very cumbersome and time-consuming. When we approached Mitsubishi, basically they told us, look, there were already a number of interesting projects available. Why not you come in and look at the space of how you were doing it with us in Malaysia? We want you to come and expand down here and we can support you in that sense. And so when we went across there to Vietnam, we found the renewable energy sector in Vietnam growing really quickly. They were doing very large projects. They had a very good regulatory system whereby foreigners were allowed to come in as well and execute projects. Not only that, our fund as well from Europe, the ESG fund, they already had prior investments in Vietnam as well. So that kind of helped it a bit more in terms of really jumping into the scene down there.
Right, so still a lot of potential there in Vietnam. You're building out here in Malaysia. What's the next market on the list, Anand? I mean, you've listed a few so far, but what's the most prime candidate right now for entry?
Coming from me, it could be different from another person's perspective. There are a lot of Malaysian companies investing in Laos and Cambodia, but I would say my next target market would be Philippines. The reason for that is, which I think I can very confidently say here, we are looking at acquiring a project over there and we want to use that project as our stepping stone as well to get into the market at large. Given that that project has passed through all the hurdles and it's been done in a very legal, safe manner, that's where we want to be next rather than going to the Cambodia or Laos or anything.
While we're talking about M&As, Petronas bought an Indian company by the name of M Plus Energy Solutions, reportedly for about 1.5 billion ringgit. And that came with they had 800 megawatts of solar capacity under operation or in development already in India and Southeast Asia. Besides the potential acquisition you're looking at in the Philippines there, are you looking at any other M&As to help reach that 750 megawatt target?
Yes, we are. We assess projects all the time. I think we do something like about maybe 7 to 10 a week. And some of these, they might not achieve the hurdle rate, so they might not be structured properly. But we are looking at certain sectors to acquire. So we have acquired, for instance, we did acquire like a solar company, and that solar company came with a pipeline of projects. We want to do something like that. I don't think I see myself per se doing something like what Petronas did of going and acquiring an asset that size, because our model has been to sweat these assets to achieve a certain hurdle rate. And when we go out to the market 5-6 years from now, we would actually want to dispose it, if it's an outright sale, to somebody like the Petronas or Shell or anybody like that, because they are willing to take a lower yield. Assets in Australia could be sold at like 4% return because their interest rates are really low. So we want to have that basically that buffer margin for us, which is our upside, I would say. Whereas if we go and acquire something right now, we will be paying somewhat a bit top dollar, and it might not be something very interesting for us to look at in terms of margin returns, unless it's a distressed asset, which there are quite a number that we're looking at as well.
Besides the Philippines one, any other M&As that are in the pipeline?
None so far, because we've been really focused. We haven't I wouldn't say none so far, but we haven't really found anything interesting enough for us to look at to get into the M&A. So far, we are focusing a lot on deploying capital to the projects that we have secured, and we started negotiating with clients about a year ago or 6 months ago. I think what we have in our pipeline is quite substantial already at the moment.
And then a lot of plans, and you seem to have the funding there. But that said, Invest Energy has been loss-making from 2016 to 2019. What have been the key factors that have led to this loss-making position, and what's the path to profitability?
Just to clearly explain as well, Rishana, the idea for the loss-making is that we were a project development company. So we are not a construction company that could recognize construction revenue. So if we really look a bit deeper into our books, we have kind of deployed almost about 45 to 46 million worth of capital in the last 3 years to develop a lot of our projects. The reason also for this inconsistency is that when we started getting into this sector, we just completed two or three biogas projects for the state government. We surrendered it to them, and we didn't want to be in that sector anymore because it was getting crowded. So it took us about a year to win our projects with Safran, which is, they are a global defense company, and Etika, there's our Wanda Coffees and all that, owned by Asahi Japan. When we won them, it was a very unique position. We were lobbying for about four projects, and we won all four at one go. And that just ate up into our entire amount of capital when we raised it, actually. And hence, we had to develop those projects, get into the concessions, and hence why only this at 2020, we started recognizing all our concession income, actually.
All right. So are you in a profitable on the books profitable at this juncture?
Yes, so we are marginally profitable. We are going to be much more profitable in 2021 going forward. And especially with the new model, to explain a bit of part of profitability, whenever the fund deploys any sort of money, so for every dollar, we generally get a percentage out of it. This percentage is basically called somewhat like a developer fee that is given to us for work that we have done to execute these projects. And it's not just also about having a stake in the company, but it's about responsibility, and it's about putting something in the game. So that would increase our profitability going forward as well. And going forward, because there's another asset company that I mentioned at the start that is going to be managing all these assets, we get to undertake the EPCC as well, whereby we would get a slight margin of that as well.
All right. Anand, on that note, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, Rishan.
I've been speaking to Anand Ramakrishnan, Founder and Group Managing Director of Invest Energy Group, and you've been listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanasan for BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.